It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Some 1,500 demonstrators are taking part in the Still We Rise march today, kicking off a two-day gathering of activists from around the country. Mayor Peduto is taking part, as is City Councilman Daniel Lavelle. I'm joined now by one of the headliners of the events this weekend, Seattle City Councilman Nick Licata, who was named the nation's most valuable local official in 2013 after he received a record-breaking number of votes for his city council position. During his tenure as a councilman, Mr. Licata helped pass the $15 minimum wage in Seattle, as well as a paid sick leave and several other social justice reforms. Now advocating for activists throughout the country, Mr. Licata joins us ahead of his speech at this weekend's National People's Convention and also ahead of his appearance at the Big Idea on Sunday in Pittsburgh, which we'll mention later on in our conversation. Mr. Licata has written a new book. It's called Becoming a Citizen Activist, and he joins us in studio. Nick Licata, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Explain what has brought you to Pittsburgh and the focus of your mission.
What brought me to Pittsburgh is to attend the National People's Convention, but also the 5th Annual Meeting of Local Progress, which is a national network of over 500 municipal elected officials who are progressive and want to pass progressive legislation. And the mission that I've been on since I left the Seattle City Council is to work with community groups and politicians, how to bring them together to have effective change and talk about the strategies that I hope will work.
Seattle passed a lot of progressive legislation, as I mentioned, while you were on the city council there, including enacting a $15 an hour minimum wage and guaranteeing sick leave. How did you and your colleagues work to make that change happen? Because it's something we've tried to do here and it hasn't happened yet.
I think what it really takes is persistence, but also takes a strategy of doing incremental changes. It's almost like how you break a boulder when you have water in there and the water freezes and it splits apart the boulder. It's the same thing we have to think about organizing. You have to look for opportunities to split apart the opposition. One of the ways you do that is by having a local government that allows for citizens to actually integrate into the government, having a lot of citizen commissions, which Seattle has. We had a human rights commission that took the lead on both of those issues. And they helped educate the public officials, as well as getting the word out to the media.
Pittsburgh has been able to make some things happen. The city did pass a paid sick leave bill last year, but a judge struck it down in December as unenforceable. So why do these type of progressive initiatives seem to work in some cities and not in others?
Well, I think pretty much people are the same in every city. And I think that one of the ways that you can get more progressive change accomplished in a city is by dispersing the power, the political power that politicians have to as many people as possible to get them engaged in actually our democracy by giving them a hand on the lever. And I think we've succeeded in doing that in Seattle to the extent that we have opportunities for citizens to not just testify before the city council. We try to have them at the table at the committee meetings. We basically try to create an open access to government as much as possible.
What has led to your belief that cities can serve as incubators for progressive policies?
Well, the reality is that the federal government is in deadlock. State governments, quite honestly, have been largely, over the last decade, been practically taken over by the right wing through organizations like ALEC. And the cities, particularly the large metropolitan cities, I hate to say this, but in some ways, they're the last hope that this country has of moving forward in reviving our democracy. But we have. If you look at any number of issues, and probably the most obvious ones are the minimum wage, which when Seattle raised it to $15 an hour, other cities around the country started adopting that. Same thing with paid sick leave. But San Francisco has done some very progressive things, as has other cities as well.
When Seattle did adopt the $15 an hour minimum wage, one of the reactions you heard was that, oh, this is going to put everybody out of business. Did that happen in Seattle?
Not at all. In fact, it was really funny. There was one story that came out literally shortly thereafter saying, oh, restaurants are now closing. Well, there was an investigation done on the 10 restaurants they looked at, and five of them actually had expanded just to new locations. Some of them basically decided that they were in the wrong location, so they were closing anyhow. So there's been, at least at that point, no direct relationship between businesses going down. And also when San Francisco passed, the same argument was brought up with paid sick leave. For instance, if you pay your employees to basically be home, take care of the sick children, or not come to work and sneeze on the food that they're serving, the same argument was used that paid sick leave would result in particularly restaurants having to close. And it turns out during the period of time that paid sick leave was enforced in San Francisco, the number of restaurants grew, and in San Francisco more so than the suburban areas that did not have paid sick leave.
They grew because people wanted to work at these places.
People wanted to work at those places. They were more efficient also. So, you know, it's not easy. Anyone can tell you who runs a business hiring new people all the time. You want to keep people there, particularly if they're doing a good job. That means you have to treat them decently. You have to provide a good working environment. I'm so tired of hearing all the time, we want to create a good business environment. I always, whenever I hear that, I always say, and we want to create a good environment for employees as well. They go together.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with former Seattle City Councilman Nick Licata, who is in Pittsburgh taking part in the Still We Rise March today, and it's part of a two-day gathering of activists from around the country. He's in town today, tomorrow, and Sunday at noon as part of the at the Big Idea bookstore at 4812 Liberty Avenue. And you can hear him talk about his new book, Becoming a Citizen Activist, Stories, Strategies, and Advice for Changing Our World. And we'll get to some of that advice. But I wanted to ask you, you spent 20 years living in a commune.
Yes.
What was that experience like, and how did it inform your political beliefs?
Well, it's funny because I actually thought it was so good. I wrote an article for Communities Magazine called Every Politician Should Live in a Commune. And that was a great title.
Why?
Yeah, because it teaches you how to negotiate. I mean, we ran by a consensus. And I know everybody throws that word around, having that's the slightest idea. That means you all have to agree. So in this collective household, you know, for instance, I thought it was at one point a good idea that we should have a TV in the house. And it took 6 months of negotiations, and we finally got it. But
people so resistant to having
it? Who knows? I mean, you know, this is 20 years ago,
you're
too.
Right, yeah.
You know?
TV bad.
TV bad. But it really taught me to listen to people's arguments about why they disagreed with me. And my goal was to change their mind, which came in very handy on a city council where I spend most of my time trying to convince my colleagues to agree with me on doing something. And ultimately, that's what life's about as well. I mean, if you want to make some progressive change, and we believe in democracy, we're believing in having a dialogue and showing people that there's a better way of doing something, that it's more fair, more just, and ultimately better economically and spiritually and physically for all of us.
This weekend, there's a lot happening in Pittsburgh. I mentioned the march, but there are conversations, there are meetings. People will be discussing how to advance a progressive agenda, particularly in these polarizing political times, and particularly in cities like Pittsburgh, where a lot of what our mayor, a very progressive mayor, Bill Peduto, wants to do, he is sometimes prevented from doing by business interests or state-level politicians and laws that, as you mentioned earlier, are not meant to promote progressive ideas necessarily.
Well, by the way, I know your mayor personally. He's a member of the Local Progress, and I knew him while he was a council member here in Pittsburgh. And in the frustration he feels in moving progressive issues forward, solutions forward, we all feel who are in office. But what I would say is that anything that is really good, that's going to benefit a wide variety of people, will be challenged in the courts. We have to be prepared for that. The franchise industry took us to court regarding our minimum wage because we defined fast foods as large business. So you have to basically learn how to also carry the struggle on in the court level as well. But even when you lose on that level, you come back and you rewrite the law. We've done that and we win it. If you lose on a, for instance, a corporate-sponsored referendum or initiative, then you rewrite it. You have to continually believe that you are going to win, that democracy does allow victories. And every time there's a victory, even if it's not like a full glass, you celebrate what you have because you want to basically demonstrate that you can have momentum.
So what are the specific steps people can take to organize at the local level and start working towards change?
Well, there's simple things. Like, for instance, you can't do it alone. You have to start thinking about who the allies are. You have to understand that you make a list of finding out who, for instance, is opposed to what you're moving for. Who are the people who gave them money? Who are the people they go to? And then you begin to basically, as you know, the old military strategy, you divide the enemy. Or basically, you look at your opposition, you find out who is supporting your opposition that might support you. And then you begin to whittle away at them. You also begin to work with the media, understand who is writing what particular articles. Was there an opening there? You end up on radio stations, you know, who are open-ended, willing to talk to people. You have to learn how to use old technology like posters and new technology, social media. When you start tweeting and when you start using Facebook, you have to figure out how they integrate together. And you have to be organized so that everybody who's part of your effort is basically taking those social medias and multiplying it. If you appear on a radio program, ask people to listen to it or send it on. But it is a systematic approach. The Romans defeated the Goths because the Romans basically were organized. You know, you just can't be a tribe running down the hill with axes in your hands.
How will the tragic, violent events of this week, it was just last night that 12 officers in Dallas were shot. Five of them are dead. We had shootings of black men in Louisiana and Minnesota earlier this week that may have been what led to the violence last night. How much of that, and obviously you can't solve huge problems like this in one day, but how much will that be part of the discussion in Pittsburgh?
A very large part. There's workshops, in fact, I just came from one discussing about, obviously, police reform, or you referred to as community policing, and referred to as more transparency in how police make decisions. But part of these also are structural. Your prior speaker really mentioned that, for instance, disrespect is one of the major complaints against police. Our own survey in Seattle showed that to be true. And if you did surveys of police, a lot of them would say the response. They feel like, you know, if someone mouths off, then all of a sudden they have the right to arrest them for something. So part of what's needed is, quite honestly, social justice training for our police officers. And that cities have to put aside the money to hire trainers who are good and work with the police officers to explain to them going through this training isn't a form of punishment, which some police officers believe, but in fact is a way to help them create more support in the community, which will help them basically do their job. We also need politicians in office who are not afraid to stand up to police unions, which unfortunately sometimes are so protective of their membership that they ignore their duty to the general public.
My guest has been Nick Licata, former Seattle City Councilman, who is speaking this weekend at the National People's Convention here in Pittsburgh, part of a number of events that are taking place in our city. And on Sunday at noon, he is appearing at the Big Idea Bookstore, where he'll have copies and, I assume, signed copies.
Oh, yes. I'll be there to sign them.
Yeah. His book is called Becoming a Citizen Activist. Nick Licata, great having you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. We are out of time for now. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everyone.